Welcome to the Happy Thoughts Agility Podcast, bringing happy thoughts to dog training.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Brittany.
So last time we were talking about the U.S. Open, and so Brittany, you went with Bilbo and Quack. So why don't you tell us how you did?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was actually super chilly, and so I was freezing my tuchus off. But it was a lot of fun. A lot of wide open courses. Bilbo, he won several of the rounds. The biathlon agility, last chance masters jumping, and the last chance masters overall. And he got on the podium twice, for Masters Series and for the National. And then I took my baby dog, Quack, and it was adorable how many people thought that it was just hilarious and came up to me and told me how much they enjoyed hearing me running around quacking.
Well, that is a very funny name. Quack, quack, quack.
I know, quack, 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 quack. And, you know, she's the baby dog, and it was her first, like, big event, and so I was very kind of nervous of how she would react. But she blew me away. She stepped up to the plate every run. Her contacts were phenomenal. Her directionals were phenomenal. And, you know, she was really brave. I expected a little bit more hesitation from her going into, you know, such a busy event. But she dragged me to the ring every run, and I could not be happier with her.
That's a great first National experience for her, you know, hoping to continue. So were there any like challenges that you saw while you were down there, anything you weren't expecting? Or
a big challenge was it's a big event, and my two dogs are really vastly different. Bilbo is, you know, he jumps 12 inches. He's a small dog. Quack is a large dog with a humongous stride, and she jumps 20 inches. And then they're just so vastly different in personality and experience. And so mentally switching between the two dogs was a bit mind expanding. And it definitely took quite a bit of adjustment on my part to get that down. But yeah, but overall, it was just a fantastic event. I love the spacing. My big dog got to open up and run. The challenges were fun. And of course, you know, I got to celebrate my birthday down there. And
it's always fun.
Oh my gosh.
Birthday with all your friends and dogs.
Yes. Like people, I get to see people, you know, that I don't get to see very often, and we're all gathering and doing the sport that we love. And so that was really nice.
Okay. So we had like a couple little special shout outs we wanted to do. So the first one was to my friend Kate Almsey, and she ran at her first UKI Open with her non-traditional breed, a German Shepherd, and placed first place in the 24-inch. So she's the UKI national champion. So that's really fun to see a non-traditional breed, not a border collie, take first. I mean, we love our border collies, but it's just fun to see a different breed run and take the national spot. So that was fun.
Woot! Way to go, Kate! And newbies. It was awesome. Yeah, I actually got to see it in person, and it was really awesome. I was really happy for them. And then, you know, my special shout out was to a junior handler that was there, Kai, and with his dog Tig. They got the WAO junior handler win on spot. And I just really think it's important to encourage our junior handlers. And Kai in particular, he's just a fantastic handler. Not even just as a junior, he's just a fantastic handler in general. So it was really awesome to see him thrive at this event and just lay down some awesome courses, hold his own, you know, with the adults. And it was really exciting. And congratulations to him for winning on the team. And of course, I had tons of friends and students that also just rocked out at the U.S. Open. So congratulations to everybody that went, everybody that, you know, gave it their all and had fun with their dogs. You know, at the end of the day, we all went home with the best dog in the world.
Yep, that's what's important. you know. So, yep, all of our friends and that went, you know, congratulations to everyone that went and did well, and hopefully be there again next year.
All right, so why don't we get to the theme of episode 2 podcast, Thanksgiving special. So we wanted to do 3 ways to be thankful when things get rough. We kind of brainstormed 3 different points that we wanted to talk about today. Do you observe? Observe. Do you observe people responding in general well or positively or negatively when they have a rough run?
In some of the venues, people are just excited to get around the course and do well. If they don't, Q isn't their only determining factor if they ran the course well. Some of the other venues, people are upset if they don't queue. I think that's, at least around me, that's a lot what I see. You've been kind of all over. What's your experience?
I've noticed in Europe that they seem to have a positive outlook on failing. Like, and just when things go bad, I see Europeans just like smile and just, you know, like pat their dog on the side and be like, good try, buddy, or, you know, whatever. And then just reset up the sequence and keep running. So I think that the mentality is slightly different here. A lot of times when things go wrong that I've observed is people get very frustrated and very upset. Yes. They get very emotionally charged towards themselves, towards their dogs, towards others. And it is a very defeating thing. It is not often that I see a handler smile or laugh at something going wrong on course and they're just like, oh, good try, buddy.
Isn't it overseas too that it's more, you have to, in order to move up in levels, you have to win the class. Where in the US, it's the number of qualifying runs you have.
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of psychological analysis we could do on it.
sure.
But just on the face of things, if I had to guess, that would be why we put so much emphasis on just the outcome instead of, you know, it's more like just the destination instead of the journey kind of thing. And I know that people really take it to heart and are just so hard on themselves, their dogs, on others when they do fail. It is just catastrophic. And I know sometimes I can find myself slipping into that mentality. So like, this is not like a holier than thou kind of observation. I know that it's very easy to get caught up in very outcome-based thinking, just only about the cue instead of, well, you know, my dog just absolutely crushed that weave entry, or, you know, instead of the bits along the way, the things that work towards kind of success and things like that.
Well, I think it goes back to, you know, is qualifying, getting that cue, is that the only way you validate your run? Is that the only way it's a good run? Is if you get that cue? I think that's, you know, that's what it goes back to. It's like, if you, the only way you're going to have a good run is if you get that cue at the end of it,
yeah,
then it's almost setting, you're almost setting yourself up to have a disappointment because, you know, despite sometimes think, you know, you might not see an off course tunnel, you know, a bar comes down, there's a late cross that you put in, you know, things happen. And so if you just validate that run on that cue, on that qualifying run, then that can be hard.
Yes.
Mentally.
Yes. And so we have kind of brainstormed these 3 ways, these 3 points that you can start working towards to being thankful when you do have that rough run. So that kind of slides us right into that first one. And our first point that we came up with was find what went right. So if you only, like we said, base your happiness or whether it was a good or bad run on the cue, you kind of shoot down your confidence when your metric is only outcome based. It is only based on if I cued or if I double cued. I heard, you know, people saying, well, I don't have a double cue on the line, so I might as well go home, or it doesn't matter because I don't have a double cue on the line, and things like that. And that just is such kind of a defeatist approach.
Yeah, so one of the things, like, that I know that I've done with my baby dogs, for instance, in the past is, like, what can I find that was really good about the run? Did my dog keep all the bars up? Did my dog hit all the contacts like we do? Did my dog run confidently? You know, like, if you look at these things to measure, because maybe you did cue, but maybe your dog didn't stay on his two on, two off like you train. So maybe, oh yeah, it was a good run, but we didn't have, you know, oh, I would have liked this to be a little better. Or, oh, I'm so excited. My dog hit all their contacts and stayed on their two on and two off until I released them. You know, so finding something else about your run that you're proud of, that mm-hmm. you can pin your hat on and say, this was a good run.
Yes.
Even if you didn't cue.
Yes, correct. And I think that has a lot to do with your internal narrative or your self-talk. So how you talk to yourself, you know, after a run can create long-standing superstitions in people. I find that athletes in particular, and I consider agility people, handlers, athletes, can start to develop like superstitious behaviors when things do go right, instead of being like, oh, that's because I've worked hard and I've trained it. It's, oh, it's because I have a lucky pair of socks, or, you know, I had... you know, I pulled on my ear twice and coughed three times and stood upside down eating oatmeal. Like, you know, when we start getting into these superstitious behaviors, and you try to convince yourself that only these perfect parameters can create something that you consider to be a good run, I think that can start to influence your self-confidence in a negative way. So I think when you do find that good thing, you have to very much attribute it also to like your training and the positive reinforcement that's gone into creating that. So latching onto that one good thing, just make sure that it doesn't become a superstitious behavior. So yes. Find the good thing and then let it build into your confidence and base it off of your good training, your reinforcement, your bond with your dog, but don't let it become this superstitious, because once it becomes a superstition, that can become a monster in and of itself.
Yeah, because it becomes a habit. It's like that negative self-talk. Like, self-talk is so incredibly powerful. Just not just in dog agility, but in life, you know. So it's about creating that positive self-talk, a positive image, because it's going to, you know, get into your conscience, and you'll start to, you know, to live it. If you think, oh, this was a great run, you know, it felt, oh, we knocked a bar, but you know, that felt really good. I got to my blind cross before the sequence.
Yes. Yeah.
So I think self-talk is such an important, positive self-talk is such an important aspect to get into, you know, not just in dog agility, but in your daily, it's such a positive,
absolutely
such a big thing.
Absolutely. I know any time that I get going down that like negative rabbit hole, my husband will remind me and say, hey, that's not a positive self-narrative. You know, what you say in your head becomes what you believe. So, you know, your self-confidence is precious. So prop it up. You can be, you know, the world is out there and can tear you down really easily. And if you're already tearing yourself down internally, like that, that's not going to help create success in agility. So, you know, really fight against those negative, you know, voices or, you know, the, anything that starts niggling into your brain and just, you know, find that one thing. So, at the open, Quack had very few, clean runs, but I came off of the course with her ecstatic because I was not basing it out off of an outcome. I wasn't comparing us to, you know, comparing her time to anybody. I wasn't saying, oh, you know, we've worked that one thing. I was ecstatic because of, you know, I was finding these things that she was just thriving at. Some of our, you know, backside slice behaviors were kind of degrading a little bit. And, you know, she wasn't holding up to criteria. But I didn't hyper focus on it. And I just said, okay, I'm going to go train that. But oh my gosh, like her directionals, I can't believe it. And I focused on that. And I was just like, you are a good dog. I found the right when things went wrong.
Yes. Yeah. Cause I mean, I'm a more of a novice handler. You know, I'm only on my second, third agility dog. You know, when I first started, my young Aussie was a bar knocker. You know, and I would get really defeated, but I, you know, start looking at, oh, well, we might knock this bar, but she didn't take that off course tunnel. She yes. didn't leave me to take that off course tunnel. And that was ecstatic, you know, for me. I was super excited that she stuck with me. You know, I teach a go on. So the fact that she drove ahead of me to keep going and didn't turn around to yell at me because I was slow, yeah. you know, the all really good things in my mind, you know, when we did have a knocked bar
mm-hmm.
in the course somewhere. So I was like, oh, it's right. It was still felt really good because we did, you know, X, Y, and Z.
Yes.
So that goes into kind of our next thing is the key to success is failure. You're going to have failures. We're not all perfect all the time. So it's learning what we can do when we have these failures.
Yes.
That can...
Yes.
So, like
Absolutely.
So one would be what? Treating it as a learning opportunity.
Yes. Yeah. So nobody starts out being Wayne Gretzky, you know, like Wayne Gretzky didn't, you know, just start out. No way. You're right. You came out of the womb. You're the Wayne Gretzky of dog agility.
Yeah.
Get it, girl. But at least for me, that has been the trial and error. That those are the building blocks of success on agility and agility courses and building dog behaviors just in general in sports. Like the setbacks, the mistakes and failures are actually just learning opportunities. And if you start viewing them as learning opportunities, you excel. But if you let it defeat you every time, it's just going to knock your confidence in the dirt.
Yeah, what is the saying is either you win or you learn.
Yeah,
pro athletes talk about that a lot. It's, well, we didn't win, but we learned stuff today.
Yes.
I mean, even the top of every sport still goes in. And again, it kind of relates back to the self-talk. It's not a failure. It's we learned something.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And how much you learn or your ability to learn is how you deal with that failure. 'Cause anything worth doing. And to me, agility is worth doing. I love this sport. And yes. So anything worth doing is worth doing badly. I mean, I kind of cringe at looking at some of my old agility videos when I was just first starting out. It was a learning. It was a journey. Like, doing this sport is a journey with you and with your dog. So nobody is going to start out just, like, crushing it.
I agree. Yeah, you just can't expect, like you said, to come out and know everything. You have to stumble and fall to learn, oh, this needs work.
So the other way of kind of handling it is, you know, I have students who will say to me, you know, I just can't get a cue. I should just give up. Or my dog can't do X. It's just like these are very unproductive reactions to failure. That's not a learning narrative happening inside in your head. That is a defeatist narrative happening in your head. So really trying to even implement kind of like cognitive behavioral therapy and trying to redirect the narrative, especially when you start down that negative path, and direct it towards, we didn't get a cue, so I'm going to do some video review and see where, you know, communication breakdown was, and how can I build this into a stronger skill, and things like that.
I agree. I think that's really important, you know, as for you as an instructor, for, you know, when you get students that say that to you, to say, hey, well, let's look at how we can improve it. What skill do we need to work on? Let me look at your video. Let's see, you know, because sometimes as a novice handler, I don't know where I made a mistake.
No, that's a really good point. Sure. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure where. So yes. Then you have a mentor, you have an instructor, you know, and you say, hey, I'm not sure what happened in this run. Could you look at this and tell me yes. where you think it yes. went wrong? And how yes. I can fix it.
No, I think that's a fantastic point, especially for maybe a little less experienced handlers, is you don't have to have the answer. You don't have to see the breakdown and, you know, be able to analyze it in just a snap second and say, okay, well, this is what I need to do. You just need to be at least aware and open to it as a learning opportunity, and not just throw your hands up in the air and say, I give up. I think that was a fantastic point, that you don't have to have the answer. You just have to know that it is an opportunity to learn, and approach someone that maybe knows more than you and say, okay, what did I do? And be open to what happened, and be open to learning. No, that was a fantastic point.
Yeah, I you know, can speak from experience. Sometimes I can't see, you know, again, as an obvious handler, I can't see where I screwed up. And that's mm-hmm. why it's valuable to have people to help you.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So.
Yeah, and you yeah. don't get better at anything unless you're willing to fail enough. You just... At anything, you know, when we learn to walk, you know, I have a young daughter. When she was learning to walk, she had to be willing to fall multiple times. And that's the feedback that shows you what you're doing wrong and what you're doing right. You have to be willing to fail and approach the failure at something in a positive and learning way, instead of a defeatist way.
Well, you know, speaking of the walking, so what's the one thing they say is, you know, you praise a child when they walk, but you don't criticize them when they fall down.
Oh, I love
that. You know that it's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know they're going to fall. You don't go, oh, my God, you fell off. That's so awful. You say, all right, come on, get back. Come on, you can do it. Get back up again. So, you know, I mean, dogs are like, you know, are the same way. You don't, you know, your dog's going to have a bad run. You're going to have a bad run. It's not the end of the world. You just say, up, oh, come on, get back up, we're doing it again, come on, let's go run again.
Yeah,
you know,
just
you
treat know, yourself like a toddler.
There you go.
Yeah,
kids, dogs, you know, same idea.
There you go. So give yourself
a positive mindset.
I mean, we all have basically that primitive lizard brain anyway, so just like give yourself some reinforcement. So
M&M.
There you go. So
a treat for an M&M.
Exactly. I know that there's an aspect of letting your ego go in this as well. I know that you don't want to be embarrassed. You don't want to fail in front of others. You don't want others to see any weaknesses. And I know that I struggle with that myself. You know, with the baby dog, you know, I sometimes was like, oh my goodness, you know, people are watching, and my baby dog just bailed off of a teeter, you know. So you have to let that ego go. You can't be worried about what other people are thinking. Let, you know, that can just be their problem. They are not your responsibility. Your dog needs you to be present. Your dog needs you to learn, to be positive, to have a good internal narrative, and to learn from what's happening.
I agree. And that's very, and speaking again from a novice handler perspective, it's a hard thing, even locally. You know, you have people you look up to locally and you know, you see them do well and you go out and you don't do well. Like, oh, it's, oh, you know, you worry about what your friends and your instructor think of you. It can be a hard thing to overcome, but it's so important, I feel like, to not let that again sink into your self talk. It's just we're gonna go out and do this, and it's okay if our journey is different from their journey, and that's okay.
Yes, yes, it's important to look at it that way as well. Everyone has their setbacks. Everyone has struggled with something. Everyone is going through their own challenges. So that's important to keep in mind. I know on social media, you can get caught up on, you know, everyone is putting their best foot forward and, you know, making it seem like, oh, they're succeeding at everything and things like that. But, you know, everyone has struggles. Everyone has challenges, even in this, you know, in the sport, even if they're, you know, top handlers. We all struggle. We all have different things that we may not, you know, want to be showing to the world, but we're working through and that sort of thing.
And it's okay to show these failures. It's okay to post a run. Maybe that you had, it was an NQ run, but that you're proud of how it went.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't, again, going back to the Q isn't the only thing that validates your run. It's okay to post something on Facebook that you're proud of, even if it was a non-qualifying run.
Yep. Yeah. After the Open, I posted all of Quacky's runs. And, you know, not many of them were cues. And you can see our failures on our videos. But you know what? I don't consider the run itself a failure. Yeah, we were not clean. And I learned from it. But it's okay for other people to see her miss a dog walk or, you know, refuse a jump or that sort of thing. It's okay for
to not
others.
Show perfection.
Yeah.
It's okay to not show perfection.
Because perfection is unobtainable. No one can be perfect all the time.
Yeah. And that's why it's so, I know, again, a novice handler, it's nice to see people that on top of their game, sometimes you have mistakes and you're proud enough to post them and saying, look, it's okay. We all do it. Because, you know, when you only see people post the best run, you think that you're the only one that has this failure, the only one that doesn't cue this run.
Yeah.
So it's also like self-validating to see people struggle.
Yes.
Because you know it's not just you that's struggling, not just me struggling with the run. You know, other people struggle with things too.
I can tell everyone right now, everyone struggles. You are not alone. Nobody is the only one out there struggling with weave entries or getting their contacts or keeping bars up and things like that. You are not alone. There are many, many people out there struggling.
Yeah.
So I wanted to, we kind of have touched on, you know, the different ways to deal with these failures. But in kind of a structured way, I wanted to, you know, list the two most common ways. So the most common way is the unproductive way we talked about, where you use your failure as proof that you're not good enough, or your dog isn't smart enough or fast enough, or you'll never be able to improve. And this method of handling failure causes that emotional self-deprecation that I hear a lot at trials, just people just digging in and just not kind to themselves. So, you know, those handlers that yell at their dogs in frustration and that storm off the course or lash out at others. And this way of dealing with failure doesn't improve the performance, like we said, and can, in fact, cause your agility handling to get worse. Because it can kill your confidence and motivation and your mental management. But the second way that we kind of talked about to deal with failure is that secret sauce. Use the failure as feedback, as information, and clues to the path of success, and learn what they did wrong, and then where to focus their training. So I learned tons at the US Open of the things that went wrong. And the things that went right and where I need to focus my training for the next few months with each individual dog. And it was really interesting. And now I have a whole laundry list of things that I'm going that are my winter projects with the dogs. So, I think that those are it's unfortunate that the other way is, you know, the most common way when learning from the mistakes is so much more helpful.
I agree. Again, it goes back to, did you win or did you learn? You know, if you didn't win, what did you learn? Even winning, you still learn. There's still things that you do when you win that you still learn.
All right. So are we telling you as the listener that you should enjoy failing? No. No. We're definitely not telling you that. I'm a very competitive person, and I know I personally hate failing with a passion, and that actually will kind of flow into our third point. But I know that failing is an important part of the process, but I personally do not enjoy failing. So we're not saying, oh my gosh, you should just love to fail. You should love to NQ, but maybe start, to redirect those thoughts of, well, maybe I don't have to enjoy it, but I'm sure as heck gonna learn from it, because if I'm going to fail along this journey, I might as well use it as a way to kind of level up, and get better if failure is a necessary part.
Yeah, it's a way to make the failures positive, because nobody likes the feeling of not doing your best or failing or doing something wrong. Nobody enjoys it. I don't, just like you don't. But finding a way to make it a more positive experience in general is helpful.
Yeah.
You know, because you're right. Everyone's competitive. Everybody wants to do well. Everybody wants to be perfect, but it's
not realistic.
It's not. And yes. This is a way to help it feel better. It's not going to, you know, take it all the sometimes not great feelings away, but it's going to help.
Yes. And like I said, that kind of flows into our third point. You know, I do not enjoy failing at something. And I do want to learn from it. But our number three of how to be thankful when things get rough is to use it as motivation. So fuel that flame, baby. I know that if I have a rough run, that next time I go out into my run, I am hyper focused on just crushing it, because I use that setback as a source of increased determination. Like, I want to go out and, you know, kind of redeem myself. And so I use it as a way to push harder. You know, that whole harder, faster, stronger. And so, if my dog is struggling with weave entries, well, then I know I use that as motivation to go out and maybe revisit some of our entry foundations and things like that.
Yeah, I think that's huge. I mean, I think going back and developing or taking a class or finding someone to help you with these things. Again, novice handler, I don't know how to fix a weave entry. So then I reach out and say, hey, Brittany, I need to work on this weave entry. You know, let's do a private lesson. Let me take a class with you. Find a way to make that setback drive you to get better. And I should have been on the other side of the weaves and he would have gotten it. So no, it's fix the weaves from the off side or the not good side. And if you don't know how to do it, reach out to someone that does. Yep. Your instructor, a private, a friend that you see does that really well. Say, hey, could you help me?
Be a terrier. Terriers are not short of tenacity. So be a terrier. Be unrelenting in your drive to just get better and learn. So use that tenacity to push through your failure towards your goals. My desire and my relentlessness to work towards my agility goals is always motivating me. I have a bad run because I didn't get somewhere or I felt slow, like I'm pushing myself physically, I'm losing weight, I'm working with a fitness coach, like use it as motivation. Don't let it tear you down. Let it motivate you. Let it drive you.
Like, nope, I'm going to be faster. I'm going to make these things happen. I'm not going to sit back and just say, oh, I wish. No, I'm going to do these things. I'm going to be faster. I'm going to be stronger so I can get the goals that I want. It doesn't always have to be dog training goals. It could be a personal fitness goal. It doesn't just have to be what your dog's, you know, what my dog did. It could be me.
Absolutely.
I want to be faster. I want my crosses to be better. I want my sprint work to be better.
Absolutely. There are two beings on this team, you and your dog. You are 50% of that team. So if you're the one that needs improvement, let it drive you. Go out, get better.
I agree.
So I think that it's helpful for people to focus on why do you do agility? What drives you? What are your goals?
And things that could drive you could be, I want to mock on my dog. I want to get to nationals. It doesn't just say, I just want to have better weave goals. It could be a bigger goal that you have in mind and then say, okay, well, what's it take to get there?
Yep.
You know, you can break down like those internal pieces. Okay, I want to get to nationals. I want to get to the open. So what do I have to do to get there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that goes back to your internal drive. What do you need to do to, you know, what that internal motivation is, you know, the end desire?
Yeah. Yeah, so I think it's good to, like, develop a framework because it can be easy to kind of lose motivation as time passes. So what can be done to keep your motivation up? And so I told you I have a laundry list from the open. I literally have a list of things that I want to work through. You can really kind of structure out what your motivations are and what you're working towards. And I think it's really important to even break those down into micro goals. I want to be able to sprint and just be faster, harder, stronger. But a micro goal for that might be lose 5 pounds or, run an 8-minute mile or just small achievable goals will help keep you motivated on the way to those really big goals.
Yes, I agree. You got to give yourself small successes along the way. Because if you only say, oh, I'm only going to be happy when I can run a 7-minute mile or if I've lost 20 pounds, what about all along the way where you lost that 5 pounds?
Exactly.
Or you ran your mile faster yesterday.
Exactly.
Than I did today, you know, or today I ran faster than I did yesterday. And maybe sometimes, and you're going to have setbacks. It happens. But it's getting back up and doing it, getting back on that structure, back in the framework and doing it again.
Yes. Yes. And think of it in terms of what we do with our dogs. We don't only reinforce our dogs when they have complete understanding of the weaves. We break it down into little bits and reinforce along the way, so that the dog doesn't get demotivated and discouraged. You know, if we start to approach ourselves in a kinder and more compassionate way, like we do with our dogs, hopefully, you guys be nice to your dogs out there, then we will start to be more successful, like what we see in training with our dogs.
I agree. I think it's so important.
Yes. So those are our three ways to be thankful when things get rough, when you have a rough run. And we're actually going, before we do all of our sign-off things, Bilbo has worked with a rehab vet from the OSU veterinary facility. Her name is Dr. Ariel Markley, and she's been conducting a study to help with her research on rehab and sports injuries with dogs and things like that. And so we're going to hear from her, and she can give us a little bit of a lowdown about the survey.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Ariel Pichette Markley from The Ohio State University Veterinary Medical Center. Many of you may have seen our agility survey floating around on Facebook. For those of you who have filled it out, thank you so much. We have over 4,000 completed responses so far. Our goals with the survey are to really start the process of advancing research in the field of sports medicine, and in particular our agility dogs. And while we know that there are limitations to survey research, we really hope to find correlations between preparation, training, competing, and other factors, and either increasing or decreasing injury risk. And the goals with this are to help us guide future more in-depth studies so that we have evidence to guide our training and competing. The more data we can get, the better. So please fill it out and share it with all of your friends and local agility clubs. Thank you.
We will link the survey in the show notes on the Happy Thoughts Agility website. If everyone would just take a few minutes to fill out the survey, it would be very much appreciated and could maybe one day actually aid in helping rehab your own dog.
And I think she said that they would leave the surveys open till Monday the 18th. Is that correct?
Yeah. So she's extended the deadline for the surveys for through the weekend. So if you are listening the weekend of the 16th and 17th of November 2019, please go in and fill out the survey.
All right. So with super exciting news, the podcast is now on iTunes and Spotify.
Yes.
So go over there and look us up. One of the best ways to help us is to leave a rating and review on iTunes. That way, when people search dog agility or agility or dogs, that our podcast will pop up. So go over there, like and subscribe to us and give us a rating and review on iTunes.
Let us know what you would like to hear us talk about. Any particular professionals in the dog agility field. We are planning on having Dr. Markley on the show to talk about what she does and hopefully eventually about her findings from this survey. And we have a lot of other guest speakers lined up that we're very excited to share with everyone. But feel free to contact us and give us some ideas of what you would like to listen to or know about. And hopefully we can get to it in a future podcast.
So that's over at Happy Thoughts Agility Facebook page?
Yeah, you can find us on Happy Thoughts Agility on Facebook or happythoughtsagility.com. That's our website.
There's an Instagram page too, right?
We're also on Instagram. And this show will be available also on the website and on multiple places wherever you ingest your podcasts. We're looking forward to seeing you next time, and keep those tails wagging.
See you next time.